Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East. The very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.
Gamarjoba, and welcome to the History of Saakashvili, Georgia. I'm your host, Roberto, and this is episode 43, The Siege of Onoguris. In today's episode, we find out how the Roman general Martinus does against the Persian fortress of Onoguris. I want to thank my Patreon members who have been amazing as always with their continued support. This show could not run without you. So, you're getting a shout-out. Thanks to Audrey Neeson, Andrew Schneider, Mitchell Dutt, Eric Nicholson, Jared Eliasser, Hallie Kunst, Ari Tena, Quinn Campagna, David Montgomery, Konstantina Miglilishvili, and Ashley Fisher. You're all amazing, and I value each and every one of you. Also, thanks to everyone who joined us at the Intelligence Speech on February 8th. It was a great time there, and we talked about the Tbilisi metro system and Soviet urbanism with a Georgian flair. In our last episode, the Roman commanders Martinus, Rusticus, and John murdered the Lazi king, Gubaz II, for a mere difference in opinions on how the war should be run. This cemented the full loss of Lazi support for the Romans, as they were already aggravated by the lack of respect that the Romans had been giving them. But the Romans would get back to work, and General Martinus returned to their fortress at Nokolakevi and ordered his men to quickly prepare for a full-scale attack against the Persians. This came as rather abrupt, and getting the men ready this quickly could prove to be disadvantageous to the Romans, but Martinus did not care. He needed to take over the fortress to have some sort of success under his belt. This was to ensure that when Emperor Justinian heard that King Gubaz II had been murdered, Martinus' success in the battlefield could be something to show him. The Roman soldiers worked tirelessly as they prepared the siege engines to be moved against the fortress's walls. As Martinus observed his men's preparations, news came from a messenger. During a scouting mission, Justin, one of Martinus' own commanders, managed to capture a Persian soldier and had him sent over to the camp. Martinus was elated and went to where the Persian was imprisoned. The soldier refused to speak, not wanting to give up his army's position, but Martinus ordered his men to torture the prisoner. After hours of pain, the Persian gave in and told the Romans what they wanted to hear. The Persian battle plan was spelled out. The new Persian commander, Natradagan, had already departed Iberia and was making his way towards Kutaisi to join the large garrison General Miramiro had left behind on his death. Notredagon had sent the captured Persian soldier as his messenger, since it was common knowledge that the Romans were going to plan an attack on the Onoguri's fortress. With this news in mind, the different commanders came together in their tent to discuss their plan of action. Buzis wanted to attack the relief force that Notredagon was sending, mostly to ensure that there would be no reinforcements to the garrison at Onoguris, and this would also protect their backs and force a surrender to the fortress to progress much faster. Rusticus, who we know is not really being a commander, but a paymeister, had lots of power due to Martinus, and he scoffed at the idea and jeered at Buzis, accusing the commander of habitual ineptitude. Rusticus proposed that the Romans should instead take the fortress, and once that was complete, they could defend Onoguris and fight reinforcements from a more defensive standpoint and impede their movement into Lazica. Buzis' side eye could be felt through time and space as he watched this mere purse bearer who has never let an army tell him what was best to do or not. Agathias even has to chime in, saying, quote, "Buzis' plan was, of course, a much better one. It was realistic, strategically sound, effective, and safe. But since, it seems, the whole army shared by association in the guilt of the murderers, the worst policy won the day in order that they might the more speedily be punished." End quote. Thanks to Martinus' support of Rusticus, mostly due to their shared regicide, the idea that Rusticus put forward won the day, much to the dismay of Buzis. To this end, a small force of 600 horsemen were sent to distract the Persian reinforcements headed to Onoguris, while the remainder of the army went on to besiege the fortress itself. At Onoguris, the Persians watched as the Romans marched right up to the walls and began their siege. The Roman siege engines came right up to the gates and began their onslaught against them, looking for a way to break through. The Persians attempted what they could, from shooting down the Roman troops to slowly whittle the forces down and attacking the men controlling the siege engines. In response, the Roman archers returned fire, only for the Persians to use canvas mantles as a shield to soften and absorb the impact of the incoming missiles. According to Agathias, the siege looked more like a pitched battle than anything else. Now, let's zoom over to where the 600 horsemen had gone to distract the Persian reinforcements. They came upon a group of 3,000 Persian horsemen and noticed that their enemy was not paying attention to them. Well, by that case, they hadn't been noticed. So with that in mind, the Romans charged. The charge caught the Persians off guard and caused chaos to grow within their ranks. They panicked and fled the battlefield, thinking that there must be a larger force coming their way. A messenger was sent back to Onoguris to let Martinus know of the small horseman's contingent success against Notredagon's reinforcements. When news arrived, the Romans fought with even more vigor, seeing their way breaking through Onoguris much faster. Rusticus could only give Buzis a demented smile as he knew that his plan was coming to fruition.
In his final days, Alexander the Great's generals asked him who should succeed him. Alexander's answer, the strongest. Taken literally, this would see the close of the classical Greek age, an age thousands of years in the making. Join me, Mark Selleck, as I go back to retell the story of ancient Greece in my series Casting Through Ancient Greece. We will cast our way back to its beginnings, all the way through to the spread of its culture throughout the known world, thanks to Alexander and his generals. You can listen and subscribe to the series at www.castingthroughancientgreece.com, or you can listen on your favourite podcasting platform. Don't forget to follow the series over on Twitter at Casting Greece or on Facebook at Casting Through Ancient Greece. I look forward to seeing you there.
Hello and bonjour. My name is Josh Zucker, and I want to take you on a journey through some of the most exciting events of the late Middle Ages. Valois-Burgundy was one of the medieval world's greatest what-ifs. Its dukes inherited, conquered, and politicked their way into forging a state between the German Empire and the Kingdom of France that rivaled them both. From the Hundred Years' War to the Holy Roman Empire, from urban workers to Joan of Arc, and from gallant knights to gunpowder weapons, the Grand Dukes of the West had a part to play in almost all of Western Europe's biggest developments in the 14th and 15th centuries. If you want to learn more about the glamorous rise and dramatic fall of the Dukes of Burgundy, please join me for Grand Dukes of the West, A History of Valois Burgundy.
However, Notre Dame's reinforcements soon came out of their chaotic days and regrouped. When they saw that the Romans' cavalry were not pursuing them, this is when they noticed that this was just a small force that they could easily take out. With a few commands, the army recomposed itself, spun around, and charged at the Romans with a deafening shout. This time, it was time for the Roman cavalry to panic and flee from the field. They were unable to send up a force five times their size, and this small scouting unit fled back to rejoin their force at Onoguris, this time with the Persians hot on their tails. The siege of Onoguris continued viciously, that is, until the sound of a thunderous stampede filled the sky. The troops were confused, and when the besieging Romans looked back, they gulped. They saw what remained of their scouting force moving towards them like a bat out of hell, and the larger cloud of a Persian stampede behind them. The besieging army came into a major panic and scrambled to get out of Onoguris as soon as they could, forgetting that they had been almost at the point of capturing the fortress entirely. The Persians, both the reinforcements and the garrison at Onoguris, saw this opportunity and pressed on their newfound advantage. The Roman cavalry managed to get away, but blood rained down from the sky as the Persians sank their blades into the Roman infantry. Those who weren't cut down or stabbed would be run over by Persian war horses. What remained of this Roman infantry would run to the bridge at the Catharus River, which is potentially on the modern-day Nogiella River. The Romans scrambled to get across the bridge, and they shoved and walked over those who they could. With this large mass of men on the small bridge, some of them would be pushed off into the roaring river below, their lives swept below the currents. Those who were at the far back of the bridge would fall into Persian hands and perish. Buzus, though, seeing what was happening to his companions, as their cries of horror and anguish filled his ears, he immediately turned his forces back and engaged the Persian army, giving the Roman infantry enough time to cross over the Nogiella River safely. Everyone in the Roman army did not go back to Nokolakevi, as was once thought, where they could then entrench it and defend themselves, but instead, they ran past it, going further to the coastline. The Roman army left the Nokolakevi fortress wide open, and with it, all of their provisions, weapons, and gold. As the Persians continued to press their advantage, they routed the remaining soldiers and came upon Nokolakevi and its treasures. Cheers erupted from the men. The fortress was ripe for the taking, and now they could further cement their control over the territory. The Persians took what they could and burned down the fortifications, dismantling it completely. As the last Persian soldier took the bag of supplies from the now burning fortress, snow began to fall on the ground. It is now the winter of 555, and the Romans retreated to spend their winter in the various towns and fortresses that they still controlled, and waited to make a plan for the next campaigning season. To connect with us, feel free to find us on social media under @history_Georgia, or on Facebook, The History of Sacramento, Georgia. Our intro music is Bindisperia Sopeli by Zadashe. They now have a Patreon, so subscribe to them too if you can. To help this podcast continue, please feel free to subscribe on our own Patreon or donate via Ko-fi or PayPal. The links are in the episode description, or if you prefer donating something a bit more tangible, we have an Amazon wishlist for you to peruse. But the best way to help us is via review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcast hosts, as it goes a long way with getting the word out about the show and helping us reach new people to learn about Georgia. Madlabada Nakvamdis, and thank you for listening to The History of Sacramento, Georgia. See you next time.
Hey, History of Persia fans. Before Persia, another civilization controlled the Middle East, the very first civilization, the inventors of writing itself. From the clay tablets of ancient Mesopotamia come the oldest stories. The history and myth of the first Mesopotamians is the subject of the Oldest Stories podcast online at oldeststories.net. If you like ancient history, come check out the Oldest Stories after you listen to this episode.
The history of Persia is intertwined with conquest. It began with conquest when Cyrus, king of a small city called Anshan, set out to build the greatest empire the world had ever seen. In a series of stunning campaigns, he achieved just that, becoming one of the greatest conquerors in history, and basically started Persian history. After all, you don't get the title the Great for nothing. But he wouldn't be the last great Persian conqueror. Other Persian rulers like Darius the Great, Mithridates I, and Ardashir I would go on to become great conquerors on their own, establishing their own great empires and legacies. If you want to hear their story, and the stories of other great conquerors, many of whom are far less famous despite their great achievements, join me, Ramzi Shalah, on my podcast, The Conquerors Podcast, available on all platforms you listen through.